ready? Welcome back, everyone, to a new episode of Red Flags, Green Flags, Modern Psychology for Everyday Drama. In this series, we are talking about modern dating and the hardships and uncertainties many people experience in the dating world, especially when it comes to online dating, finding a long-term partner, or dealing with toxic behaviors. The aim of this series is to help listeners better understand what people are actually experiencing, thinking, and believing. Not to judge what is wrong or what is right, but more to gain a perspective to our modern dating world. And by using a psychological lens to interpret these experiences, we can gain better insights on how to best navigate a complex maze of strange behaviors where people are often treated like options rather than humans. Wow, what a world we live in today. But let's see what we can do about that, right? If you are serious about dating, then you already know how difficult it is to date in a world where commitment and loyalty have long disappeared. Gone are the days that people would be hopeless romantics searching for eternal love and uttering the words at the altar, "To death do us part." People's agendas have become too full to fit in a partner, getting social satisfaction more from friends while jumping on an app to look for some sugar when the tensions are high. When it comes to dating, people often run away at the very first sight of a red flag. It seems easier to swipe right than to solve interpersonal issues with someone you're dating. Even telling someone you don't like them seems to be too difficult nowadays, and instead, people ghost. Deep down inside, I believe we all want to be loved. But dating feels so difficult and emotionally threatening in this digital age that people are even giving up on trying to find a life partner and focusing more on themselves. Joining me on my podcast today to talk about dating challenges and also about why people are giving up on dating is Tatiana Shin, a brand manager in the beauty industry here in Dubai, and Daria Smith, events director in the hospitality space in the GCC region. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome. Welcome. So welcome to the show. First time that you're doing a podcast?
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's always a great conversation in the sense like we're seeing, I think, a lot of people that can't see us right now. We're in a beautiful setting.
It is.
It's almost like at the fireplace. It feels very, very kind of like homey, doesn't it?
Yes. And yeah. Cozy. Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. So that's how I love to have these conversations homey conversations, as I like to call them, also around the topic of dating. But before we get into today's podcast, Tatiana and Daria, maybe you can start to tell the audience a little bit more about yourself. What do you do and how long have you been here in Dubai?
I will start. My name is Tatiana. I am 35 years old. I'm not afraid to tell my age. I am a single mother as well, and I have a 6.5 years old son. So that brings another perspective on the dating as well. And I've been in Dubai for 11 years now.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks. Daria?
Fantastic. So thank you for introduction. I'm event director and I've been in the event space for quite a few years, traveled all over the world, lived across multiple countries, born in Russia, grew up in the Balkans and lived the past 15 years in the UK and recently in Dubai. So I've just literally finished my first year in Dubai. Single. I'm celebrating my big 40.
Wow, congratulations. Year,
so, yeah. You look younger.
exciting, yeah. But I think lots of people are quite nervous about it. But yeah. I think I'm actually looking forward to it. I'm embracing it. And I think that this is a great age to be in. You know, you feel wise enough, but still young in heart.
So. You know, a lot of people say nowadays, the Gen Z say the 40s are the new 20s, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They are.
It's true. I have a lot of friends who are 40 plus and all of them said that their life actually becomes way better when they're 40s because they're financially stable, their career is already sorted and now they can do what they want and they can afford to do what they want.
Yes, but I think there is also a challenge in terms of dating. I don't know whether I'm sure there is a bit of a stigma about certain ages and for women as well, the older you become, the almost more invisible you become as well. And 40 40s is quite a mature age, and I don't know whether some people would specifically avoid dating someone older.
It's interesting because in the other show that we recorded, the previous show, we actually talked about that. And there, of course, we still have this stigma, right? When men are in their 40s and 50s, yes, it's expected that you should have almost like a younger woman. That, you know, it's accepted, not expected, but more kind of more socially accepted cross-culturally. But I think one thing that is really happening nowadays is that the stigma is slightly, you know, slowly breaking down, that when you're in your 40s and 50s as a woman, that, you know, you should not enjoy dating or you should not have options. And I shared some data from dating apps that actually shows that younger men are very interested in women in their 40s and 50s. And and so because they see that, they see they're attracted by the maturity, but also by the stability and the initiative that a more mature woman can bring to the table, which they can actually learn from. So that was a very fascinating discussion we had in our previous podcast.
But is it something that they want just to try, experience, tick off their list, or do they see this as a potential to build something long term?
Well, I think it goes for everyone, right? I mean, some of them actually want that. Some prefer, some guys prefer an older lady or a more mature woman, you know, and that maybe for the short term or maybe just for the long term. So, I mean, I if you ask me personally, I think it goes both ways, and definitely there are younger men that are interested in being more with a more mature woman. But again, the question is, what is compatibility? And you know, we didn't have this plan for today, but I think it's a really interesting question, though, because often when we look at kind of like age, what they call age desperate couples, where the one is older than the other, we look at them purely from an age perspective. But compatibility is not just age. There are other aspects that make you compatible, such as, for example, your psychological and emotional compatibility, where someone can say, hey, I'm 25 years old, I just can't relate to my peers. I want to be with someone older and more mature. Or it could be also, for example, physical compatibility. A lot of, because here, especially in Dubai, there's a lot of women taking care of their, you know, their physique. And around the world, more and more people are taking care of their physique. But you have women that are very fit, right? And they want to have a man that is equally fit. And that is maybe sometimes harder to find at the same age. So there's also maybe that physical compatibility. And the other compatibility that we don't often think about, but can bring people from different age groups together into a relationship, is sexual compatibility. And so you might have a very high sexual drive at 40 and your 50s, and you won't find that with a partner of your same age. And so compatibility is, I think what we need to take away from this is, let's not judge a book by its cover. There are many more elements that we can compare on, right, on that perspective.
I think it's more of a recent conversation that I had with my brother, who's almost my age. He's like 2 years younger. And the way he was, he's single, and the way he was describing his ideal partner, he's like, I wouldn't date anyone more than, like, older than 30. And I'm like,
What are you holding yourself back on?
Lost opportunity. Exactly.
You should be listening to this podcast.
Absolutely. I'm going to send him the link afterwards. Absolutely. Totally.
It's true. And I just have a question for you as a psychologist, because I had experienced also being exposed to different age groups. And what I noticed also, some of my friends are having a big gap in the couple of age. Does it have to do something with the self-esteem or self-confidence? Because usually, like, when the man is much younger, so we're talking about 10 years plus difference, I would say that they're overcompensating something when they're dating a younger woman, because they're less challenging. They are less successful in life, and they agree to the lifestyle that the men can offer. That's my point of view. And I've seen this in Dubai as well. And like, echoing what Daria was saying, a man who is 40 years old, and I have this conversation with my friends openly because I would like to see how it is on their side. They would honestly tell me, if they're 40 plus, they won't consider a woman more than 30 plus. Like, 35 is an old for them. They would look for 25. They put their filter 90 plus, maximum 28, 32. That's the mentality in Dubai today.
So, but your question was more around,
Is it the converse? Like, I heard that this is probably like a psychological cause to that.
Why men prefer younger women? Well, I mean, you know, there's an evolutionary explanation to this. So, evolutionary wise, women are, more fertile when they're younger. So there's a fertility perspective that can be taken into consideration as one of the explanations, but there's also a cultural perspective to this as well, depending on where you are in the world. So that's one aspect of looking at it. And what's very interesting is that for women to men, it's almost the opposite, right? Women younger find men who are older more attractive. Sure. So you probably ask yourself, where's the evolutionary component with that? It's very interesting. It is within how the older man is able to hold himself at his age. So if a younger man, and again, you know, this is not only from this kind of conversations, but also the literature jumps into this as well, is that young men have shorter mating strategies and women have more long-term mating strategies. And for maybe for the younger man, if he, you know, especially here in Dubai, blings the Bugatti, right? Wears the Armani, it's for a shorter term dating strategy, right? Shorter term mating strategy. And so when you have the younger man doing that and maybe the more established man doing that, then if you can still hold yourself at an older age, that means your genes must be better. Kind of like the evolutionary psychological understanding behind that is there. So that's just an evolutionary perspective why that is. But it's true because if you look into, for example, in the dating app data, you do see that there's a lot of matches that happens. Like when men's age, actually it's from the age of 26. OkCupid, I've cited them before. Because they share a lot of data, and OkCupid shows that a man's like interest value goes up from the age of 26. So up to 26, not that interesting, but from 26 onwards, it just becomes more and more and more. Whereas for a female, it seems from the data, and this is based on, you know, matches and matching up. It seems like up to 26, 27, or up to 30, but then it starts to decline.
Yeah.
Right. So we could go on for this for hours, but there is an evolutionary perspective. But what I really love about dating apps nowadays, it helps us to understand the psychology of dating behavior more than we ever could understand before. Right. So it's interesting to look into that. Hey, but before we get started with more deeper questions, I have one more opening question for you guys. And I think you're going to love this one. As you know, our episode today is about the perils of modern dating. So if I could ask you, if you could score Dubai's dating scene from 0 to 10, which score would you give it? Let's start with you, Daria, and then I'll come back to you, Tatiana.
2.
Wow. Why is it a 2? Now you've got everyone's ears right now. Why is it a 2?
I think there is a certain reputation about Dubai, dating in Dubai, and how challenging it is. And what makes it also hard is how transient this place is. You know, people come here for some period of time. It can be 1 year, it can be 10 years, it can be 20 years, but ultimately there is always an expiry date. So
it's kind of like short-lived.
I think people tend not to look for anything serious. So if you're looking for anything more than just a plain hookup, I think that's, it's not the most exciting place to be in.
Well, if you're into hookups, it's the best place to be in.
Absolutely.
And I think it's interesting because, you know, that mindset, if we have, and we talked about that also in a previous episode, if you have that mindset, you're not going to think more sustainable. You're going to think more short term. But other cities in the world, think of like New York, Paris, you know, Amsterdam, you know, they're also very transient in that perspective also, but also more maybe fast moving. And it makes it a little bit harder to kind of consider someone kind of more sustainable. Before we move to Tatiana, why is it not a 1? I want to give people some hope. So why is it not?
Because I do believe there are some nice people around here and it just... it's just a little bit unlucky. And I've heard it from both men and women looking for something a bit more serious, but both men and women struggle. So I don't think it's just for women that it's hard. Yeah. I heard the same.
Men are facing also issues as well.
Like, it's such a paradox. Like, there are so many lovely people on both genders. What's happening? Why they are not connecting? Yeah. You know, where it's breaking down.
So, that's what we want to figure out.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And Tatiana, what's your perspective? What's your score?
Well, I think I would give it a 5 because I've been single in Dubai for more than 6 years. And I also tried dating while I'm traveling, whether it's for work or... leisure time. So I would say that Dubai gives a lot of international exposure, and you never know who you could meet in terms of background, nationality, like work background. It's totally different. And I guess Dubai is one of the few places in the world that lets you be exposed to this different crowd. The other thing is that it's true that even to build a friendship, not even relationship, is difficult because Dubai is a transitional place. People come here to get experience, maybe to earn some money and save. And it's kind of difficult to find something long term because you are treated as an option, just one of thousands. And today with all the dating apps, it's easy and people do not want to invest time and to be emotionally invested as well, because you never know how long it will last and you don't know exactly what is on the other people's mind.
Right. And there's always maybe a better option out
Absolutely.
There. Absolutely. Because if people are coming in the whole time. You still give it a five then, right?
So yeah, I still give it a five because, as I said, I actually make friends out of my dates. It was a bit weird, but you never know who you could meet because it's very international and very diverse.
Absolutely. Hey, and you mentioned in your introduction that you're a single mom.
I am a single mom.
Tell me about that. That's also a very unique situation because a lot of people that come to Dubai are often single.
Yeah.
But you're a single mom and you're a professional. So maybe you can share some of your experiences around that in terms of dating.
Yeah, so being a single mom, first of all, doesn't give me enough scores on dating because, one, I would always prioritize my child and the time with the child. I'm also a workaholic, so I work a lot. And if I have a free time, I would always prioritize it for spending it with my child. So then being the very like short time for dating, also, it's a good filter for me as well, because in the beginning, I was a bit careful what I say to a stranger, because you don't want to open up as well, not to get hurt, because some people are not nice, to be honest here. So now it's a good filter for me. I go straight. I'm a single mother. I don't have time to waste. So if you're not into something serious, thank you, bye. So it's an additional filter for me.
Right. And so you date mainly to have a potential life partner.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Because I don't want to waste my energy for something that is not sustainable.
Right.
I am more into intentional living with everything I do, basically.
So not just dating in itself.
Yeah.
And how about you, Daria? Do you date specifically to find a life partner, or are you just okay to have a random hookup? Well, maybe a hookup sounds a bit bad, but you know what I mean? Like just to...
For fun.
For fun. That's the word that's used nowadays. Like, do you meet for fun?
I feel that I've had experiences, absolutely, but I feel that you spend lots of energy on it. Yeah. And the more for fun experiences you have, the more... The less energy you've got on something more meaningful. And I think I got to a stage where I think I had enough of it. So I'd love to find someone that is more of a partnership.
And a potential partner.
Yeah. A potential partner. But I think different people see partnership
in a different perspective. Yeah.
And I know lots of women and particularly lots of my friends that maybe sort of in that 30s, mid-30s, late-30s range that single, want to be mothers, want to have families, but it's not necessarily something that I'm looking for. So it might be also a challenge for a person that I'll may potentially connect with, and they may look for a different option
and,
as
and
well.
And so as a follow-up question, and I like to ask people this, where do you then, if maybe dating apps, because, you know, a lot of people now don't believe in dating apps anymore, and, you know, there's everything you can find on dating apps. Maybe in the past, there were ways to socially vet people, but, you know, you've got everything on dating apps, mm-hmm. and especially the serial ones, right? That was what sometimes makes it very toxic and scary. So do you believe that you can find love on a dating app?
I think I gave up a little bit on the dating apps. I tried a couple of times and I met some people. I had something short-lived, let's say. And I came to conclusion that I think that... people who use apps quite actively, they are serial daters. They are the people that believe that there is always a better option around the corner. So I'm thinking going back to, you know, traditional dating where you meet someone in an environment.
Speed dating, something like that?
I tried this once. I think it's quite awkward, and I think it's really difficult.
It's so awkward.
Yeah, and
Never tried it.
I'm the type of person that prefers one-on-one interaction. So I would like to build that sort of connection.
Yeah.
And 15 seconds or what, 1 minute, or 5 minutes, doesn't whatever work, it is, it doesn't work. You don't get...
It's on this premise of love at first sight or attraction or something like that.
You can probably feel some energy initially, but I think it's, it's just...
Well, one thing I've noticed in Dubai is that, you know, though you know, the apps don't have a vetting perspective, there's a lot of circles here. Like, people call them groups and circles, right? Your friend groups, everyone, because like you're saying, it's hard to make friends. But when you do have good friends here in the UAE, you tend to stick with them a lot, right? Yes. And you don't let a lot of new people in. Mm-hmm. It's very kind of safe in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But different people know different people. So sometimes you get invited to go to like a dinner party or something else. And I hear and I've seen and experienced myself that it's a great way to meet other people. And actually people are very open for dating then because you're a friend of a friend. So you must be okay, at least, you know. Yeah. Have you experienced any of this here?
I've done myself those matchmaking sessions. Intentional. So I know a few friends who are single and I'm thinking, oh, I think they might potentially connect. So why don't I organize a brunch or just drinks or some activity and invite all the friends that do not know each other? And I haven't been successful yet, but I'm just starting.
You're hopeful.
There's something around the
corner.
I've been introduced to friends of mine and I also tried matchmaking. It didn't work out so far, unfortunately. But I agree with you that it gives you, at least when you're on dating app, you have no idea who the person is.
Yeah.
You don't know their background and their past. With friends, it's you feel much more relieved and there is a trust aspect to it. Also for them, there is a responsibility. They can't mess up because...
Right, friends are involved.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's always... I've always had this idea that dating apps should have like a dating score, like a social dating score, like some kind of score that you can... Like with Uber,
the
right?
Rating.
I've been on this ride now, literally.
Yeah, that's true.
How was your ride? Ride was a 2, right? Or ride was a 5. And then... You can kind of, you know, but then again, people could play around with that and you'd, you know, for the serial daters, you want to show up, but hey, if you're just in it for the ride, you know, why not? But I think maybe that would have some kind of, it would work, but maybe not. I don't know, but I feel that we're missing this vetting perspective. You know, if you feel that you can get away, because that's what screens do to us, right? Screens help make us feel that we're so far away from the individual. I can treat you however I want to treat you. Yeah. No consequences.
Exactly.
Or like you were saying, like, you know, I see you as an option. So I don't see you as something serious. And so in that perspective, we're losing that human component to which then we start treating people, you know, not so well anymore.
Nice. Yeah. And think about all the merit people in relationships going on their apps and just... You know,
having a second life.
Yep.
That's what they call it nowadays. Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Ashley Madison, wasn't that the website? Oh, no, you don't know. Of course you don't know.
I think you're much more advanced than us.
Well, look, I've been on the investigator.
In the Middle East, we are safe from this kind of website.
No, there was a website. I think please correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was called Ashley Madison, where, and in the Netherlands, they had something called Second Life, where you can basically try and, you know, it's called ethically cheating. So that your partner knows about it, you're open and you're open to have more experiences, but you want to stay together. Unfortunately, the site got hacked with millions of emails that leaks afterwards, but that's a different story in itself. So, but on that tone or like kind of that story, you know, people are changing their perspectives about traditional monogamy in that perspective. How do you see that? Do you believe that, you know, are you looking for monogamy? Are you open to looking for something that is not traditionally monogamous?
I am not. I am very old school and I am into monogamy because I am a loyal person. So yeah. If I am loyal in my relationship, I would expect the same from my partner. But I think it's interesting perspective because today there are more and more options and different couples accept
situationships,
open relationships and stuff. And I think it's Estelle Perel who said before monogamy was one partner for life. Now it's one partner for one relationship. That's more than monogamy. It's not like our parents lived together for 30 years and never cheated. It's totally different.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Daria?
It's quite a complex question. Yeah, absolutely. If I'm with someone, I'm with someone 100%. But I don't think that you can look at it as black and white as well. Mm. There are different situations. And I think there's definitely something changing the way how the relationships are looked at. You know, it's no longer married for life and that's it. Yeah. I think people look being more open to options.
Do you think there's a stigma around it by opening up a relationship or, you know, because nowadays the options that you're talking about, situationships, mm-hmm. now there's things called like, let's be exclusive.
Yeah.
But what does that mean? And so what's really interesting, what people don't realize is exclusive, like I want to have you exclusively, but they didn't define what it means. So what a lot of people are facing right now is like they're physically, intimately exclusive, but emotionally not. Because also you can cheat emotionally. Mm-hmm. And so what gets lost in that translation is, yeah, let's be exclusive, but let me be emotional and have emotional connections with other people, but not with the person that you're being physically exclusive with. So do you feel that there's a stigma around this, or do you think that this is kind of becoming more acceptable, these kind of different forms of relationships?
I think just more and more people, it's the reality today. And technology is the blessing and the curse. So I guess every couple, either he or she is doing something on the side, emotionally or physically, I don't know. But there is a doubt always in today's, in modern dating.
Right.
That's probably one of the reasons why some people are giving up on it, because you can't guarantee that exclusive is exclusive. And what is exclusive, you know? As you said, for some people it's physical exclusivity. For someone it's also emotional.
Yeah, yeah. So you're saying, in a sense, that maybe in today's world we're becoming too fragmented, or maybe you're saying that we're focusing on too many. Whereas before it was this monogamy, now we're saying, oh no. Yeah, I can be physically monogamous, also like physically intimately monogamous with you, but on the emotional side, I'll do this. Or now with cyber dating, and you know, I hear this a lot. You know, my boyfriend, he's liking all these girls' pictures, and I just don't find that acceptable. And he says to her, like, "Well, come on, honey, I'm just liking her pictures. It's not cheating." Yeah. And there's also a blurred line because, many people can see that as not cheating. Some people are more sensitive to that, and they might see that. So there's no clear definition of what is cheating, because you're liking someone's pictures or you're DMing someone.
Maybe you're fantasizing about them as well. Right? You know, that's another thing.
Yeah. Oh, but when you're together with someone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably the case. I don't know. But my point was that even if we don't want to agree with what is happening, it is happening,
it
unfortunately.
Is happening. Yeah. Because maybe we have just too much access. Yeah. Daria, what would you say about that?
I think ultimately we want to feel respected. We want to feel loved. We want to trust our partner. And I don't think that will change. All of those things, all of those options. Yeah. It's become easy. And I think that the problem is with the social media as well, that our attention spans are no longer 7 seconds, there 3 seconds, whatever it is. So with the relationship as well, we are now struggling to build stronger relationship with someone, and we get distracted by abundance of different options around. So
when you were processing that information, I mean, I could also see an emotional reaction. Is there anything that you had experienced on that note?
I've seen a lot of experience in my life, in my family members, in close friends as well, where, you know, people married but actually not married, cheating, multiple relationships. And I think I'm still figuring out what's actually a right thing and what's a wrong thing. It's I think you need to be probably have an idea of what your values are and what's important for you personally, and then find someone who shares those values. And as long as those values connect, I think you're in a good place. But there are so many different options now, and it's finding the
it's challenging
right,
as well.
It
right?
is challenging. Yeah.
I feel that. So on what you were saying, Tanya, I thought it was a great point that you made. You know, we're people are not choosing not to date anymore. And and when I look on social media, like everyone, because you know, I post a lot of stuff around the negativity and the perils and challenges around dating, and people are like, "Doctor, I give up." You know, I give up. Like, I get it. Yeah, but like, don't give up. Like, no, I've given up after watching your videos. So I'm to blame also now, in a fun way. But of course, but yeah, people are giving up, and I think this is becoming a trend. And we are living in a kind of like self-development me movement right now. It's like, I have to focus on myself, and I need to care about my sanity. And so let me invest in me, let me do the work, and, you know, let me deal with it. So it's time for me now. But there are many other reasons why people kind of like are choosing, you know, not to date anymore, because maybe they've been in some bad experiences. Your self-esteem gets affected, right? Mm-hmm. Or you just get too scared to wanting to trust another person. Trust issues come up a lot. I often get the question, "Doctor, how can I trust again?" Right? And I think that's a big thing. I would love to hear from you why you both believe people are giving up on dating.
Well, I am one of these people, I can tell you. I was first introduced to this dating things and social media apps probably like 5 years ago. And I was very naive when I went for the first time on the date. And I got hurt, obviously. And then it took me some time to process, and I didn't want to experience this again. Mm. I would say that the trauma that you get, or the negative experience, actually stops you, because you're better off being by yourself with less drama, less problems. And as you said, like, today we're all into self-development, and I should say I'm lucky to have a good support system, because I read also there is a study that has a correlation with how good is your support system. The better is your support system, the less you will invest in dating, because usually we're looking for a partner to go through hardships of life together, to have a support. So if you have a good support and family, friends, your circle is always there for you, you are less prone to look out for a partner, because you're good by yourself. Of course, we all have different needs, like romantic and maybe physical. But then when you think of it again, Daria, you could tell me if it's the same. You're like, oh, again, no, don't have time. Don't have power for that.
So how do you take care of your physical needs?
I would say I am probably genetically lucky. I don't need that much.
Yeah. But that's where maybe apps come in again, or?
No, I'm very much into my energy and who do I share it with.
Right, so you're selective about
it. I'm very selective.
Yeah, great. Daria?
I think there's a lot of changes happening as well. And we are trying to figure out this new system. And people are struggling to figure it out. And there are so many stresses outside of relationships are in work and future. So we had a class on AI, for example, and the future can be scary. You know, are we going to have jobs, not going to have jobs? What shall we do about it? Social media, the access to the information, news. I think there's a higher level of anxiety around, and people feel that, you know, they need to spend lots of energy on feeling better.
Yeah, or maybe having a sense of control over your environment.
Control, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So they feel that it's too much hard work. Yeah. And I think people are also become, to a degree, lazy. People don't want to invest in building relationship. Right. And when you've had those bad experiences where you tried something and someone gaslighted you or disappeared or just was there lying and not for anything sort of serious, you get tired of it and you're like, well, I can't have any more of it. I just give up on it. And if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen as well.
Safest person to date is yourself.
Well, I guess. Yeah, I guess. But I still believe we are social creatures and we do need support systems, social connections. And I think it's important. And I'm an introvert and I prefer to get my energy having that alone time.
Yeah.
But I still crave interaction. I still crave intimacy. I connect with friends and it's good to have someone in your life
yeah.
a bit more long term and share with and build more complex relationships, not just how was your day, but actually
more
be able
connections.
To deeper connection.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's an interesting point because, you know, we need to, we're social by nature, as you mentioned. And I remember a Harvard study that came out. It was like this study that followed people for about 60 years, 80 years. And they were trying to figure out what were those factors that, you know, had a huge impact on health and on resilience and mindset. And and the number one factor that was the best indicator for longer life was your social connections, right? And we I think in today's world where we think social connections is our Snap score or how many people we have on Instagram, that's not our social connections. But we're replacing now the social interaction, which costs time to invest in. And it's hard and it's not easy by quick and easy, you know, text messages and and sharing content online, but that's not really where the human connection happens. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I guess, you know, as a psychologist, but also specializing also in this field of AI, I'm trying to kind of bring these two together because I think technology has, you know, though it's great for the pockets of the people that build the technology. And look, let's be honest, when the technology is built, it's built with a good purpose, like connecting people, making people happier. But eventually the investor metrics takes over the well-being metrics. And then bad things start to happen. And then, you know, we're using these apps, but if you look at like persuasive design, it's there to hook you and keep you engaged and not take you off time, which, and you know, the long-term effects of that, I mean, there's so much studies have come out that show the psychological, physiological, psychosomatic issues that people are actually having from consuming technology. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to be more intentional about creating technology that actually betters us as human beings. You know, that's one of the things that I'm looking into for the future. But I think we need to start changing the technology and helping it to foster better connections and strengthen human life instead of holding us back. That's an interesting point. And so I'd love to kind of ask you this thing because I also address a lot of questions from my followers. And I have this wonderful question from Janice. And she asks, I don't feel anything anymore, like zero. It's so strange. I don't care if a guy ghosts me, but I also don't feel emotions for someone. Is this normal? Like, I've heard a lot of my friends who have similar issues like this. Is this normal?
Maybe it's a trauma response, you know, when you get through so many negative experience, or maybe it's positive, and then the higher the highest, the lower is the low. You know, when everything is nice, and then suddenly they disappear. Of course, you kind of build this protective mechanism to not to feel anything, not to get hurt. I guess it's probably the explanation.
Yeah, What do you think it is, Daria?
I agree to. I think it is like a protective mechanism, and I can sympathize with Janice. I sort of sometimes feel that way as well. So you sort of put the shield and try to protect yourself from feeling anything because you've been hurt too many times and you've just stopped feeling anything because it's safer that way.
Yeah.
And it is scary and and it is a bit of a trust issue, I think, to a degree that you do not trust people anymore. So you are not open enough. You can't be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And but it helps you not to get hurt, I guess.
Okay. Yes, I've been looking into this. I think this is a really interesting question because I think there's multiple factors at play. So if we leave all kind of like the mental issues out of the mm-hmm. equation, what else could be causing this? Because I've done some kind of interesting TikToks and reels on this, and those reels have gone viral. Like literally, it's like, why is this happening? Like it seems to be a trend mm-hmm. amongst a lot of people right now that they're not feeling anything. And so if we go back to the apps, because of the apps of the short-term dopamine hits, there could be also that kind of numbness. And if you look into the literature, people are feeling less, maybe because of the short-term effects of, these dopamine hikes mm-hmm. that we're getting from our mobile, from our technology consumption.
Yes.
But maybe there are other factors that we have to look at. And I think this is an interesting question I also want to further investigate. Like, why are people generally feeling more numb? We should be more emotional, right? Mm-hmm. We're creatures, we have emotions. And what's holding us back from trying to express our emotions or feeling anything at all? And so there's also this kind of thing that's come up now, which is called, people are called Arrow and ACE. I don't know if you've heard of this before. Arrow is a short word or a kind of like an abbreviation for aromantic.
Mm-hmm.
So people who don't feel any romantic attraction to other people. And then ACE is asexual. So you can feel arrow, but you can be asexual mm-hmm. and not have sexual feelings or attractions towards another person, but you can feel romantically attracted mm-hmm. to some of them. And so this is becoming also of a trend nowadays. So people are saying, hey, I'm aromantic. And it's very interesting because, I reflect on this myself. I try to investigate things from a scientific perspective, but I also like to have these conversations with people and find out what your perspective is mm-hmm. on this. And when I reflect back on my own experience, I think, I've been in many long-term relationships and now it's kind of like, maybe it's because of age. I'm not that, the little puppy anymore.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Fall in love. No, it's like, that's, I don't have that anymore. And I'm equating it to myself because of age, but maybe I'm also feeling and experiencing what Janice is asking here.
Yeah.
In that sense, and a lot of people are, and so that's why I wanted to have that discussion. Mm-hmm. Like, why are we not feeling as much anymore, and should we do something about it? I think that's the bigger question. Mm-hmm. If we're all experiencing this for whatever reason, should we not try to feel, because we're mm-hmm. humans, aren't we? Aren't we? Shouldn't we feel? And what could we do about it? Like, maybe that's a nice question to talk about. Like, what could we do to feel more? Besides the trauma and besides
disconnect from social media, news, the technology that's surrounding us every day. I think you mentioned earlier something about that certain the chemicals, the way it works,
dopamine.
Yeah.
Because we're getting that fixed so quickly nowadays through social media. Through watching TV, getting some. And I've noticed as well, people can't watch anything, just watch it anymore. They are still on their phone.
Yeah, multitasking.
They're watching multitasking because we don't have the attention span to just dedicate on one task.
Right.
So maybe our connections in our brain getting so much fixed that it's numbing. Numbing the way we feel.
Or we're just trying to look for quick fixes.
That's
an interesting point because in 2010 or 2011, when we didn't know much about internet usage and mobile gaming and that kind of stuff, and the Missouri University for Technology, they studied undergrads, so they followed undergrads online kind of internet usage anonymously. And so they then eventually found there was a strong correlation between negative emotions and internet usage. And that became kind of like a negative emotion theory or hypothesis where, and now we know that's the case, right? So when we're using our mobile phones and technology and gaming as a quick fix because it's a painkiller, mm-hmm. but we're not addressing the actual pain. Mm-hmm. That costs effort. Mm-hmm. That exactly. costs time. Mm-hmm. So basically our technology consumption has kind of become a painkiller for us and then maybe numbing us for that matter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're saying, Daria, let's get rid of the technology. Let's have a digital detox.
Yeah, not get rid of it altogether. I still believe that there's lots of positive things that come out of technology, but detox, definitely technological detox.
I like that one.
Not using any apps, going away, maybe some retreats, I don't know, recharging.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so and being intentional about it, right?
Be intentional and spend time with people intentionally as well, without
the mobile phones.
It's painful to, you know, whenever you go out and you see those couples sitting having a dinner and they are both of them on the phones and you look, maybe they just checking the message, but no, they're like, they spend for an hour, 2 hours, they just sit there looking into their phones and you think
that. There's actually some studies that have come out which actually show that even having the mere sight of your mobile phone on the table can lower your overall evaluation of that date. The mere sight of it, of a phone on the table, can lower your overall evaluation of the other person and the date it's experienced itself. So everyone listening, keep your mobile phones away. Be intentional. Tatiana, what about you?
So I would say I agree with Daria as well. And I have done 10 days silent retreat. It was a lot of organization, but I actually didn't have my phone. I completely disconnected. You can do that in UAE for those who listen in UAE. And it was an absolute, life-changing experience. And I guess one of the reasons why also today people are getting numb is because they lost connection with themselves. They don't listen to their inner voice because, as you said, when they're sad or when they're frustrated, it's easier to go on social media, watch a video, do something, text your friend just to say hi, you know, send it to 10 people and then you see how many reply. Yeah. I heard that it brings dopamine as well when they reply. Mm-hmm. You feel better for a while and it's easier and less painful than probably sit and actually feel this negative emotion for five minutes and just let it go through your body and it will eventually leave. But we keep doing these things as a quick fix and distracted. And that's the reason why we feel numb, because we're so disconnected with ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's funny. Maybe this is kind of what I do. I always pay attention to my friends. And when I see sometimes that my friends are responding too quickly to my message, look, I'm always online because of TikToks and Reels. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I sometimes get shocked. I'll share with you. I spend 12 hours apparently a day on my phone, yes, whereas the average, if you want to stay within the safe zone, it's like less than 5 hours.
Yeah.
But if you go, and I've done my own research on this, if you go beyond 5 hours, you can come into the strong habit forming zone, and that's when potential addiction can happen, mm-hmm. unless you're intentional about your usage. So you're using it for research, but if you're just mindlessly scrolling, that's when it can actually hurt you for more than 5 hours. But I do it, so I'm saying I'm doing this intentionally. I am doing it intentionally, all research purposes and production content creation. But I spend 12 hours on my phone. But when I see someone else, do you see that? Like someone in your phone, in your friend group, always responding to your messages. That might be a sign that they're going through some difficulties and they're using their mobile phone technology consumption as a way to deal with it. Yeah. So it's a nice thing kind of to be reflective about. Mm. Hey, so one last question and then we'll go to a fire round. And then of course your two red flags, green flags in dating. Mm-hmm. One final thing, there's this thing happening nowadays because people don't want to date anymore. People are falling in love with fictional characters. Now, when I used to live in Japan, that was a big thing because, you know, people in a very stressful environment, other Asian countries, I think, as well. But now I'm seeing that in the West. And recently also when I did some content around that, people just went crazy for it. Like wow, you acknowledge us. Have you seen this happening in your friends, or have you experienced anything like that, like falling in love with the protagonist of a story, of a book, either fictional or maybe cartoon?
I mean, like, I sometimes fancy some characters out there, but I don't fall in love with them. No, for yeah, sure. Yeah. No. I still separate the character from actor.
From real, or reality.
From reality, yeah. I've never heard of it, actually.
Yeah, and people really actually fall in love with them, like, because it's their escape from reality. And, you know, the things they say, actually, is that, God, this character is perfect. There's nothing wrong about them. They won't leave me. They're always there when I need them. They're not going to hurt me. And even when they're the villain, there's perfection there for them. It's interesting. Tatiana, have you seen this before? Have you heard about this before?
I've heard of it. I just saw today on TikTok that there is a woman who actually married an AI character. She created it and she
wow, that's a whole nother level.
She married it. I think it is in US. But I guess it's common in teenagers when they fall in love with a hero or something. But among my friends, I didn't see that.
Well, I take Japan again as a reference point because you'd be Hello Kitty.
Oh, yes.
Hello Kitty has she's reached cult status, you know. I like Hello Kitty. I love Hello Kitty. I live in Japan, but there's adults that love her. Like, literally, it's just everything.
Obsession.
And yeah, there's an obsession about Hello Kitty. So it also happens, of course, it can happen much more when you're younger, but it also happens in our adult years. And maybe because of today's world, because we're becoming so dissatisfied with this. And again, this is part of the research that I'm investigating and looking into and writing about it in the book. But I also wanted to hear your perspectives about this.
Have you had experience?
I've never fallen in love with a fictional character because I don't feel that bad about of course, I've had hardships. Yeah. In my love life. But you know, it just, you grow from it. You learn. And I look back and I say, look, there've been good experiences. There've been bad experiences. I know what I don't want anymore in my life.
Yeah.
And I definitely do what I still want. But I'm still a hopeless romantic. I still believe in romance. Okay, let's bring it to the... it's getting too personal. Ooh. So let's get it to a fire round. I want to do the fire round with you and just tell me your quick answer. Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Tea.
Tea. Inner peace. Action. Okay. Cardi B or Nicki Minaj?
Neither.
Can I
That's
say
what
no?
everyone says.
No. Anyone else?
American Pie or Mean Girls, the movie? American Pie or
American
Mean Girls?
American Pie.
American Pie, yeah.
I haven't seen Mean Girls.
No? It's also pretty
funny. I'm a cave woman. I don't have Netflix account.
No Netflix?
No Netflix.
Okay, no Netflix. Online dating or meeting someone at the supermarket?
Supermarket.
Supermarket.
I love this, but we're losing our abilities to go up to someone and say, hey, I like what you're wearing.
I had actually a recently experience, not in a supermarket, but in a pub where I saw someone. I thought, interesting. Like, let me try to strike a conversation. And it was through a friend he was with, but it did work out, you know.
Oh, nice.
No, not like nothing serious, but like as an experience overall. It was...
the moment worked out.
The moment worked out.
Okay.
Just overall, it was on a trip and all of that. But it was just, I was curious, like, can people still meet?
Yeah.
You know, in a natural habitat, you know, they can, you know, you just need to be a bit more confident, I guess.
Yeah.
But you would like to have that from a man, obviously.
Maybe we want to do that more, right? Maybe we should do that more, like be more intentional about going up to someone and instead of getting into a lift and taking out your phone because we feel so anxious.
Yes.
Hey, how are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, they freak out. That's already a filter for you. That's fine. They weren't the right person.
Yeah.
But taking the initiatives, because sometimes a life partner or soulmate is just one question away, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Cool. I'm going to wrap up with two of your red flags and green flags, Daria, and Tatiana, two of your red flags and green flags. So,
red
flags. In dating, right? In dating.
Yeah. Red flags, I guess, if they haven't had any long-term relationships, I think that could be a red flag for sure. You know, particularly at my age, you know, you would expect someone would have a relationship. And if they haven't, that could be
a potential warning.
And just sort of generally, like, really being bad at communication, I think that's a big red flag straight away.
You know? Give me an example. What would be a bad communicator?
Oh, well, I don't know whether it's necessarily it's knowing how to build connection. So you start the conversation, and for me, you know straight away whether it is going to work or not. Right. If they have a conversation but they don't ask questions, they don't ask about you, or they don't listen. So it needs to be sort of two-way thing. And when you sort of become the one that asking all the questions,
you just give up on that.
That's it. It's not going anywhere. Yeah, for sure.
Thank you. Goodbye. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And Tatiana, what are your two red flags and your two green flags in dating?
Red flags is one of the things is when they talk bad about people, about their exes, about their family, about their friends. That's a big red flag for me. Another one, if they're too materialistic, you know, when they start to brag about what they have in life. Green flag is family values. If they like their family, you know, if they have the cute picture of their grandma, and it shows the values of the person, and also the confidence. When they know who they are, when they are in peace with themselves, that's a total green flag for me.
When they're at peace with themselves, they feel confident about themselves, they know who they are.
Because this is the base. If they're not confident, they will mess up with other things.
Yeah. I forgot to ask you, what were your two green flags?
I'd say not necessarily family values, but a good family, like someone who have got a strong connection with their family. I think it's so important. And the type of friends they've got as well. I really believe in, tell me who your friends are and I'll tell you who you are.
I think that, like, this idea that you are the average of your five best friends.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure there are some studies around it. I've read it somewhere that people you surround with, you become like those people. So they talk about surrounding yourself people you aspire to, because you will be striving to become better like those people. Yeah. So if you know that they are, you know, not very good people, it's straight away.
And also a negative environment can also have a huge impact on us, right? Good people can turn bad. We've seen that happen many, and maybe that's what we see in the dating world, because eventually when these toxic behaviors become the norm, it's like you have to behave that way. Otherwise, you know, you'll maybe be seen as weak or, you know, we adapt to that environment because that's become the norm. And so therefore we treat people the same way we're being treated, but that can also hold us back. So green flag is surrounding yourself by good people.
Good people. Yeah. And having interests as well. Yeah. I think there are lots of people that just don't do anything
at all.
And someone who is active, someone who's got hobbies.
Oh, we got lots of green flags here. Yeah.
someone who travels, you know. I think, like, someone who, like, if I have to pinpoint someone who travels, it straight away tells me a lot about that person.
Okay.
Because it sort of widens your horizon, and you're becoming a bit more open-minded and tolerant.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time and for joining me in this episode of Red Flags, Green Flags, where we actually kind of dived into romance and the perils of today's modern dating world. Thank you for sharing your own experiences, your own challenges, but also what you see is a way maybe we can change things around. I think we've got a long way to go. I mean, I don't think it's going to change quickly, but these conversations really help. And I think the people that are listening in really just can take so much away from your own experience. Probably they're thinking so hardly right now after listening to you guys and thinking, I need to do this differently, or I can do this. And I still believe in love. I'm at a 2, but I still believe I can make it a 5, or I can go from a 5 to a 10, or I just give up and I'll go to a 0 and take care of my kittens and myself and a cup of tea. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Daria and Tatiana. And I hope that you enjoyed it equally so as I did. And again, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you
so much for inviting. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
It was a very interesting conversation.